Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Farm Progress Show site in Decatur, Illinois, I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Come visit us at the corner of West Avenue and 3rd Street. That's just inside the main gate and about a block and a half to the right. Coming up in this half hour on our program, we'll talk with Darren Newsom of DTN about the marketplace. Brian Stark from the Anderson is here on the site as well. We'll discuss some of what's been happening in the cash grain market with him. DTN's Bryce Anderson will join us to take a look at the weather forecast and talk mostly about frost, the potential problems that they may have in the northern parts of the Corn Belt. He even takes a look into next year. We'll also hear all about dicamba beans from Rob Fraley at Monsanto, and we'll do that right here on this Tuesday edition from the Farm Progress Show in Decatur.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Tuesday afternoon. September corn down 2.5 cents today at $3.33.5. December 3.48¾, 2¼ lower. March at 3.61½, 2½ lower. The May down 2¼, 3.69. And July corn at 3.75¾. Down 2¼ cents. September beans 4½ lower at $9.30¾. November 9.37¼ down 4. January 9.46½, 3¾ lower. The March contract down 3¾. It settled at 9.55½. Next year's July soybeans at 9.70½, down 3½ cents. Soybean oil for the day 31 cents lower at 34.28. And the bean meal on the afternoon finished the nearby contract at 294.60, down 90 cents for the day. September wheat up 2¾ at 402¾. December at 429¾, a penny and 3/4 higher for the soft red. July of next year at 480, up a half. And the hard red July at 476¾, up a quarter of a cent. Live cattle futures in Chicago, August down 95 at 105.25. August feeders at 142.60, 17 and a half higher. The September there down 285 at $143.02. Lean hogs for the October contract at $60.22, down $1.40. December at $56.15, $1.42 lower. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, we do hope you'll drop by and see us here on the Farm Progress Show site in Decatur. This is really quite simple to get to. We open at 8 o'clock, close at 5 o'clock tomorrow, 4 o'clock on Thursday afternoon. Doesn't cost too much to get into the gate, and the parking is free. Just to follow Interstate 72 from either side of Decatur and take the Farm Progress Show exits. Doesn't take too long normally to get in. Fantastic day here on a Tuesday afternoon. In fact, let's take a look at the weather forecast. At this point tonight, we'll have clear to partly cloudy skies, a low of 59 degrees. Tomorrow, some sunshine early, a few clouds later in the day, a high of just 81. Fantastic day to be out on the Farm Progress Show site in Decatur. A low of 61 on Wednesday evening, sunshine and 81 on Thursday, another good day, and 55 and fairly clear on Thursday evening. Friday, partly cloudy skies, a stray shower or thunderstorm is possible, a high of 77 degrees, east-northeast winds at 10 to 20 miles an hour. Then on Friday evening, partly cloudy skies, a low of 57. Saturday, intervals of clouds and sunshine, a high of 81. Saturday night, clear and a low of 60 degrees. And on Sunday, mainly sunny, a high of 85. Do drop by and see us at 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock. We're up on the stage each and every day. Orion is there in the morning. I'm there in the afternoon. Glad to have you in the audience. In fact, really would like to have you here Wednesday. The Secretary of Agriculture should be in the tent during the 2 o'clock hour. So you can drop by and see him then.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Hey,
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason here on the Farm Progress Show site in Decatur. Come out and visit us tomorrow or Thursday if you get the opportunity. Orion's up on stage in the U of I tent at 10 o'clock. I take the stage at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. We have lots of folks that are here, and we bring some interesting people up. In fact, a little bit later in this broadcast, we'll hear from Rob Fraley from Monsanto about dicamba beans. You'll want to stick around for that. Right now, Darren Newsom is here. He and the crew from DTN are here. We'll hear from Bryce Anderson at the end of the program when we talk about the weather forecast. They're located on 3rd Street, about a block from the U of I tent, and we're on West and 3rd. So come out and see both of us. Hey, Darren, thanks so much. Glad to see you here at the Farm Progress Show in Illinois.
Yeah, it's always good to see you, Todd. Always good to get back in this area.
Did you fly over or did you drive over?
Bryce and I drove over from Omaha. We took the southern route, so that means we went across northern Missouri. Give us a little different view. The week before, I'd traveled across Iowa to come back down to the Decatur area. But, so we took the southern trip this time.
What was your windshield assessment?
Windshield assessment, really hard to tell. You know, it's always so hard to tell. Crops did look a little rough. I thought the Missouri crops looked a little bit better than might have been expected. But the Illinois crops, they just didn't look that good. They're good. They just don't look as good as they have in years past.
So you came across at where?
We came across on 36 to Hannibal, and then 72 from Hannibal on over to Decatur.
Right. So you came through Hannibal, Jacksonville, Springfield, right, on over to Decatur. So I've run that route fairly often, and there are some dry pockets across there. I haven't gone across the river really and into Missouri. I did run from, and the folks that are listening have heard this, from Burlington to Des Moines on the southeastern corner of Iowa. I don't know whether you've been there or not, but in July it was just burnt and done, so it looked pretty awful. However, USDA said not so bad, at least last time around. What do you think they'll show up with when we get to their September report?
No idea. But it's the key. I mean, really, that's the only thing the markets have to hang their hat on, is if the Keno game in the September report is comes out in farmers' favor. Let's say USDA, for whatever reason, reduces its production of corn and soybeans, corn or soybeans. That might bring some buying back to the markets. Other than that, there's no reason to. So, I mean, from now until we get those September reports, I think it's going to be very difficult. I know we put a low in the corn market last August. We just went to new lows again here this week. It's possible at any time we could spike rally this, but you know, if we just sit back and look at it, there's really no big news item to come out until we, you know, so USDA's role as, you know, market maker should be proven once again.
Are you of a mind that we will have a pre-harvest low, or you just don't know until we get to the September report?
Yeah, you know, this is a situation that we're dealt, is that there's no way to tell. It all depends on what USDA says. We could have a pre-harvest low, but that pre-harvest low might not come until the day of the September report. And then we spike rally into the close if the numbers come out bullish. From a technical point of view, you know, we've kind of slipped into a dead area here in the corn market that could see December contract fall to the 315, 320 area. We're around 350, a little below 350 right now. So, you know, if we just look at technicals, look where it's been. I know last year we got down to like 314, 315. If we want to hold that low, but we could still test it and still not, and still say that we put in a pre-harvest low.
And for the soybeans?
Soybeans, I actually like the soybean market a little bit better. You know, we just broke below 950 here. We're sitting in the upper 940s. We've got support in the low 930s. If that doesn't hold in November, then their contract low is 907. And really, if we go out to the monthly chart below that, we're way down at 855. I'm a little more bullish the soybean market than that. I think we're seeing an overstatement of soybean domestic ending stocks, but we won't know that until the September 29th quarterly stocks number. That's when we'll get the final. That's when we'll get our final numbers for domestic ending stocks for soybeans. So, anything could happen between now and then. But I do think that number is going to come out lower than where we're sitting right now.
No, so you think it's on the supply side, but not necessarily in terms of production this year, but in terms of usage from the current marketing year?
I think soybeans, you know, we're still going to be facing the same old battle. We could be looking at another record crop in soybeans, but we've got global demand that just continues to go up. So it chews into our stocks by the time the marketing year's done. What's the focus right now? It is production. I mean, the beginning stocks, ending stocks argument, that's something that's already been put on the back burner because the focus has shifted to new crop. You know, if similar situation, if soybeans are wanting to rally, they're going to have to see a lower production number in September.
Good to talk with you. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
That, of course, is Darren Newsom. He is with DTN. You can come visit him along with Bryce Anderson. They're both here in the DTN building, which is right there on 3rd Street, not very far from West Avenue. And, well, that's the same corner that the U of I tent is on, so you can come see me, too. Well, we're here on the side of the Farm Progress Show, and I've run into Jeremy Wilson. He's from Crop IMS out of Effingham. You've heard me ask the question, if you've been listening over the last week, a couple of times, because Todd Hubbs, U of I Ag Economist, mentioned this to me, that the South has raised a lot of corn, and if you add all those states together, all those areas together, it may have an impact. Jeremy's been traveling in those areas. He stopped me and said, hey, wait a second, have you talked about this? So tell me what you think you saw.
Yeah, you know, as I've traveled in the last 6 weeks, throughout really the heart of the Midwest and even points beyond, and was in northern Alabama and in that area and visited with some growers and was just talking about the incredible crop they've grown and how, you know, in the past they've not run a lot of cotton and run a lot of corn and had really horrible yields, and the cotton market come back, and so we made the switch to corn now, or to cotton away from corn, and they're just having a spectacular crop year down there with corn, you know, numbers that we here in central Illinois, you know, probably not topping out the 240, but, you know, hearing a lot of, you know, 180 to 200 bushel corn, and just incredible. And, you know, my thoughts was, is, and in other travels, you know, I've been as far west as western South Dakota, and, you know, there's just such a variation, and you get into pockets that maybe aren't the states that we watch as traditional corn states, but have some pretty good corn in some pockets, and just wondering that implication. And with this good crop we see in the South and what we see in the southern Minnesota area, And even in, you know, parts of the Dakotas, South Dakota specifically, just an incredible crop. Just makes me wonder if that's, you know, being built into some of these corn numbers we're hearing. And, you know, maybe with Illinois and parts of Iowa and Indiana, you know, struggling to raise the kind of corn we want to raise, is there just enough other bushels in these other states that we traditionally haven't paid a lot of, you know, attention to in the past because it's not been that big an impact? Just is really getting me to wonder if there's, you know, more corn out there than what maybe a Midwestern row crop guy has always thought as he's, you know, looked out his window across his corn crop.
Well, thanks for the window view. The insight, of course, about 25% of the corn crop comes out of Illinois and Iowa. We know that it's had some variability problems. USDA still says the numbers are not too bad. It'll be interesting to see whether that southern part of the United States, a place we don't really think about corn crop, if there's enough across the whole of all those South states to make a difference. I appreciate you taking time with me.
And, you know, it's kind of funny you say that because I've got people that know I travel, and, you know, normally by about 1st of June, they're all like, Jeremy, what's this corn number going to be? And, you know, at that point in the game, I'd primarily only traveled the I states, and I said, guys, I just can't imagine we're going to get a corn above a 155 number, you know, maybe a 159. And you know, then we got the USDA report to come out, and my phone rung off the wall and said, guy, you know, what are you thinking here? You know, you've always been, you know, relatively close, and you're saying 155, maybe 159. And I just wonder now, just from what I've seen, you know, in the South and some of these other areas, just I just feel like maybe I struggle to say the numbers quite where the USDA has it today, but it really makes me wonder if we might have a little more corn than what originally I thought, you know, at least prior to 2 weeks ago.
That's Jeremy Wilson. He's with Crop IMS out of Effingham, Illinois. Well, on this Tuesday afternoon from the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, we're now joined by Brian Stark. He's of the Andersons, dropped over to help us out on the stage at the U of I tent, which, of course, is at the corner of 3rd and West Street. At 10 o'clock, Orion Samuelson is up each day, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm there. Come by, drop in, sit down for a while, and we'll talk a lot about what's happening on campus and quite a little bit about what's happening in the marketplace, too. Speaking of which, Brian, I'm wondering how you're set up at this point. as it relates to the elevator there in Champaign, a big one. Tell me how many bushels capacity you have and how you are set up to hold what looks to be like the third largest corn crop ever harvested in the United States, at least as the numbers come from USDA at the moment.
Yeah, I think we're prepared fairly well. Harvest is probably still 3 to 4 weeks away. Our facility at the Champaign location has 12.5 million upright storage, as well as 4 million ground capacity. So we've got a lot of space available and ready for potentially big crop that we're looking at starting here in a few weeks.
And then you've got quite a bit of old crop, I would assume, still hanging around too.
Right. We have a little bit, just like everyone with the carry in the market, but we're in the process of liquidating and selling some of those bushels so we can prepare for the new crop that we'll see here in a few weeks.
Now, we just finished a conversation with some folks that were touring through the southern part of the United States. We've talked a little bit about this on the air a couple of times. And the corn crop that's coming out of the southeast, which seems to be pretty spectacular. Any one state, no big deal, but if you add them all up, there might be enough really to make a difference in the marketplace. Have you had these kind of discussions?
We've talked about that. I think that there's definitely the ability to cover up some of the shortfalls we see in the central part of the Corn Belt with all those states combined. I think the question is it good enough to offset in Iowa and Illinois? And that's yet to be determined, depending on how good the crops or poor the crops are in some of the areas of those states. The one thing I will say that has been noticeable, even with that big, large crop, is the challenging logistics we've seen here lately as Hurricane Harvey has moved into the Texas region and potentially moving up towards the Delta as they start to get into harvest progress down at some of our Tennessee locations.
Yeah, so logistics there would be both train and boat?
Yes, both train and boat, obviously, could be a problematic here, at least for the next few weeks, and we're only hoping for the next few weeks. But so far, we haven't seen it move up north into some of the areas that might impact some of our locations. But that's certainly something we have to monitor because it could impact short-term demand. I think one of the things we've said all along is you never be bullish based on bad logistics. And I think there'll be some opportunities maybe for some quick ship premium in certain locations, not necessarily in our area, but down in those areas to the deep south, as the market still has a strong desire for bean exports. The demand's been good, and I think they'll continue to see some firmness there, at least in the next few weeks.
Hey, Brian, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Brian Stark, of course, is with the Andersons. You know, one of the great things about being on the Farm Progress Show site is that you get to meet a lot of people and you get to see a lot of interesting things. Not only the machinery, but sometimes some experiments, like the soybean experiment right inside the University of Illinois tent here on the site. There are four pots, and they have soybeans in them that were sprayed, I think, about 11 days ago with dicamba to give you an idea what dicamba intolerance looks like compared to what a dicamba tolerant soybean might look like and what that damage could be like. Rob Fraley is here right now to talk with us about dicamba in the field and the kind of problems they've had this year, along with Doug Maxwell. He's a researcher here on the U of I campus. Doug, why don't you first take me through these four pots that are on display in front of us?
Well, we have two actually very high rates. These were just sprayed 7 days ago. So we have a 1/20th and a 1/200th rate, which are the two low rates of dicamba. Then we'll have the same amount sprayed on a dicamba resistant population. Then we have a standard soybean that's not resistant, no spray, kind of an untreated check.
So this is just to demonstrate how sensitive beans can be to dicamba if they're not dicamba resistant. Of course, this is something, Rob Fraley, that you would have seen over and over. Yep. There's been a lot of conversation about dicamba drift and volatilization. What do we know about the problem in the United States?
Sure. Let me address that. Let me start with the fact that for background on dicamba, we licensed the dicamba gene from the University of Nebraska back in 2005. So we've spent over a decade developing the trait, putting it into soybeans and cotton, and a decade developing the new formulations with reduced volatility. Everybody knows about dicamba. I mean, it was discovered in the 50s. You know, it's one of the leading crop chemical products in the U.S. And importantly, we've spent a lot of time developing reduced volatility formulations. So here's what we know, and I'd start by saying, first of all, we've had a tremendous experience with Xtendimax this year, and that's based on the fact that farmers have a real need and demand for better weed control. This year, we launched on 20 million acres of soybean and 5 million acres of cotton. It was the biggest launch of a new product we've ever had. And that's simply because farmers know they need better tools to control their water hemp, to control their pigweed. So let me just put it in perspective for Illinois, because I think a lot of people get confused between what's going on and what they hear. So Illinois for this year planted a record 10 million acres of soybeans, biggest year ever. The average soybean field size in Illinois is 40 acres. That means across the state, farmers planted 250,000 soybean fields. So far on our hotline, our 1-800 number, we've had inquiries from about 400 farmers on their fields. So if you do the math, 400 inquiries out of 250,000 soybean fields, that says about 99.9% of the farmers and their fields are doing great with the technology. But we still take each one of those inquiries very seriously. We visited almost every one of those sites, and there's a couple pieces of really good news here. First of all, of the farmer sites that we visited, almost 75 or 80% are easily fixable. They tend to be, the biggest culprit is not following the label on the buffer, not having the right nozzle, not having the right boom height. And that's good news, because that's training, that's education. We'll be running a nozzle giveaway program to make sure farmers are using the right nozzles. The other good news is I've had a chance to visit personally a lot of leafed cupped fields, and the vast majority of those are recovering completely. I expect there to be no yield loss. And that's also good news, and we're waiting for the combines to play that out. Last thing I would just say is, there's other things to be concerned about. In other states, we've seen illegal use of non-approved dicamba products. We also know that sprayer contamination can be a big issue, because to the point that Doug made, a thimble full of dicamba in a 500-gallon spray tank can cause leaf cupping. So rinse out, clean out, really has to be taken seriously. And, we've also, done some work with labs to show that, unfortunately, some of the other generic products that farmers have access to have cross-contamination. I've also heard that, unfortunately, some of the spray pumps have malfunctioned, and we've seen cross-leakage of products in a sprayer. So tank contamination is an issue that we'll also include in our rinse-out, clean-out in our training. And last point I'd make is, back to the beginning. Most farmers have had a great experience with the technology. We're anticipating that the Xtend acres will double next year. That's the demand and seed that we're building for. So, we're working hard to make sure that every farmer everywhere has a great experience with the technology.
Thank you so much, Mr. Fraley. I appreciate you being with us for the day, and thank you for coming to the U of I tent and talking to the
appreciate
folks
it.
Here.
Thanks. Good to be here.
And of course, is Rob Fraley joining us here on the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
It's National Whiskey Sour Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1794, Sir Gilbert Blane was born, a Scottish physician. He was among the first to require a diet including lemon juice on Navy vessels, which virtually eliminated scurvy. James Lind discovered the value of citrus juice in 1754. In 1828, the first U.S. patent for a break of any kind was issued to Robert Turner of Ward, Massachusetts. The patent called the device a self-regulating wagon brake. In 1915, Nathan Pritkin was born. A nutritionist, he believed that exercise and a low-fat, high unrefined carbohydrate diet helped reverse his own heart disease. He founded the Pritkin Longevity Center in 1976. In 1967, Charles Darrow died, an American inventor. He designed the board game Monopoly in 1933, and he received a patent for the game in 1935. The patent titled it a board game apparatus, intended primarily to provide a game of barter. We wonder what Darrow would think of Farmopoly, where the tokens include a pig, cow, boot, hat, tractor, and armadillo. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Through expert advice and tailored solutions, Busey helps homebuyers achieve the dream of homeownership. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You know, when you come out to the site here at the Farm Progress Show, you can run into lots of folks. And one of the people that is here throughout the duration of the show is Bryce Anderson. It's probably a name you're familiar with, meteorologist with DTN. You can always check him out online there at the DTN websites. Thanks, Bryce, for taking some time to talk with me today a little bit about the weather. Farmers have been asking a whole lot about the cooler weather we've had, about the late maturity of the crop. What are you thinking?
Well, Todd, the scenario for this year is certainly different than it has been the last 2 years. In 15 and 16, things really panned out quite well for the late season with mild temperatures and crops dried down in real good shape. Now, this year, we have so much variability because of all the replanting that had to be done in the central and eastern Corn Belt last winter, or rather last spring after the heavy rains hit. And then with the kind of a slower pattern here in the latter part of the summer because of this cooler trend, that I think that there's going to be a larger need for drying down that crop this year. And along with that, even a normal occurrence of first frost, I think it's going to be enough to cause some late season finishing issues. We know that in the northern Corn Belt particularly, that the growing degree day totals are likely to be no more than just what the hybrids need in order to make it to the black layer stage before that first frost comes in.
And that would be in those areas, what dates?
Basically north of U.S. Highway 20 from the northern third of Iowa through Minnesota and into the Dakotas along with Wisconsin and along with the northern, say the northern eighth to quarter of the state of Illinois as well. In those areas, you're looking at the first frost date in that first 10 days or so of October. And there is quite a bit of caution on the part of growers who I've talked to about that.
So right now you're erring on the side of you're going to have to spend more money to dry the corn out, but there is a potential for a frost problem.
Yes, there is. And the situation for drying is frustrating because of where prices are. There's going to have to be more investment made in handling the crop this year. Propane is going to be a bigger item this year than we've seen in the last couple of years. And along with that, I think it also kind of takes harvest out, kind of drags it out a little bit more just because of the drying that has to go on.
Can you look ahead and tell me anything you're thinking about for next year?
Well, next year, I'm pretty cautious. I think that we are setting up, at least right now, for a drier year next year. We know that there's a terrific drought going on in the northern plains, and I don't think that that is going to ease notably through the balance of this year. And then there's been this recently dry scenario develop over kind of the south central part of the Corn Belt, through south central Iowa, into parts of Illinois and Indiana. And finishing out this year, I don't look for a whole lot of fall moisture to come in and help out that soil moisture profile. Through the winter, I don't think we're going to be getting a whole lot of winter moisture either. And so that takes us into the spring with some soil moisture concerns to look into 2018.
Hey, thanks so much. And hopefully we'll have you back. Maybe we can talk a little bit about South America.
They'll be fine, Todd. Thank you.
That, of course, is Bryce Anderson. He is with DTN. You can visit him right here on the Farm Progress Show site. They're not actually very far. Right there on 3rd Street from the University of Illinois tent, which is at the corner of 3rd and West. Come see me, too, and we'll see you on Wednesday or Thursday. I'm Todd Gleason.